This is Kate Saffin, Bedlam, talking to Tiasha Fermé about the Female Role Model Project. And it's a completely different piece of theatre than you'll see in many, many parts of the Fringe. So I'm going to start by asking about the origin of the idea and give us a little bit of background.
For sure. I think I was always interested in unusual women, in strong women, in women who were breaking stereotypes and molds. At some point when I was a teenager, I didn't necessarily identify as a woman. Not that I was identifying as a man, but I just wanted to be as far away as possible from any labeling or identification. Because I felt like I wasn't what a woman's supposed to be. So if I was a woman, then I couldn't be me, or I could be me and then not be a woman. I was doing a lot of different pieces. One of them was about sexuality, about also breaking stereotypes and sort of like media expectations for how women should behave sexually. And that piece was called Cocktails, Confessions of a Nymphomaniac. Then I was doing a lot of work on Marlene Dietrich. I wrote my own one-woman show, basically studying a lot of her. And I was just fascinated with how fluid she was and how her own she was, how she didn't want to obey any external norms and expectations. And at some point I realized that what I really want to talk about is strong women, strong female pioneers, because I felt like we don't have a lot of role models for those. For anybody who wants to be different and wants to feel empowered by being different, it's not like a lot of women you can look up to. So I was like, okay, this is the theme I want to explore. And then about at that time, I started being kind of obsessed with neuroscience and epigenetics. And I was like, wait a second, I want to combine these two ideas. Also, I started toying with the idea of creating my own theater company, which later on I did. It's called Transforma Theater. And our mission is to create interactive theatrical pieces at the convergence of science, consciousness, and ritual. And so if you look at consciousness as an entity, we want to look at it through the lens of science, neuroscience, epigenetics, and then on the other hand of spirituality. Something more elevated, something more metaphysical. And I feel like this particular piece in a way encapsulates that, or we're already doing that.
Okay, well, I have just watched it. So can you, just for anyone listening, give a bit of a picture of an overview of the show?
Yeah, for sure. So I would say it's a scientifically enhanced multimedia device theater piece created by an ensemble of very, very different women, mixed with neuroscience. And we basically wanted to see how the role models that we choose throughout our life influence us, and what's the underlying neurobiology that makes these processes happen. We start with childhood, where we sort of attack expectations, our expectations as women, and what we are brought up with in childhood. And then, can you pause it?
Yeah. We've got a very, very excited cast back there, so we'll set off again. Okay, over. Yeah, so you're starting with childhood.
Yeah, and then in teenage, we sort of look into our obsession with body, and media's obsession with body, and to really kind of look under hood of how we actually feel about our bodies, and, you know, the constant measuring up against something or somebody who does it and looks better. Then in for adulthood, because we're sort of divided into childhood, teenage, and adulthood, we kind of look into the nowadays picture of who's in the media and who is the potential role model. And in this case, we choose women who aren't our role models, but are influencers. And unfortunately, they do influence a lot of people, and they are role models to some. And so we play a game that's called Who's the Top Role Model of Today with Oprah Winfrey. And the guests are Kim Kardashian, Melania Trump, and Bing Bing Fan. So we kind of really look at, you know, like different parts of life and also different parts of growing up and maturing, as well as different role models. And then on another level, what we do with neuroscience is we have two pretty intimate scenes where we actually invite audience volunteers to come on stage and share stories about their moms. They're paired with an actor. character, and they both wear headsets, and at the end of stories, basically our live neuroscientist on stage interprets our neural activity live. We also have a video, a brain-influenced video and audio design. So yeah, it's really quite dynamic, and it's really a convergence between, you know, autobiographical live human stories of different perspectives. And we really wanted to involve neuroscience to the, you know, max extent.
Well, it all comes together beautifully on stage.
Thank you.
But I'm imagining that there was quite a bit of work to actually get all those elements together and working. And so tell us a bit about some of those processes, the devising, the finding the right people to contribute the science side of it, the technical side.
I mean, this is really the real question. This is where the real work was, bringing all the little pieces together. First of all, on a, you know, big picture speaking, bringing theater and science together is difficult. It's hell, because science works very differently than theater does. And as we were experimenting and trying to make, you know, things work or see what does work inherently, we learned that basically 90% of things that you try in science don't work. And scientists are used to that. And theater people, we're impatient. You know, you have a month to figure out, you know, or to write your show and put it on, and that's it. So, you know, learning that the curves of learning in these two very different disciplines are completely opposite was a huge, you know, shock for us, and then also, you know, an impediment maybe in the beginning until we figured out how to make it work. Also, I mean, this show in a way is set up for failure. There's like so much margin of failure. However, I want to like knock wood that we've been doing pretty well. But you know, technology is moody, actually.
Yep.
Technology actually oftentimes or usually doesn't work. So it's all about troubleshooting and, you know, going through that.
And because you are involved in the audience, so there are places where you're offering the audience a chance to ask questions. And I'm guessing that sometimes you get a very strong response there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't get any at all.
Yeah, I mean, I feel
so you've got to be ready to deal with whatever, haven't you?
I feel like we burn so much calories doing this show. It's incredible. Sometimes I'm like, oh my God, you know? I'm in this like elevated space, and it feels like the show lasts an eternity just because actually so much so much is going on in the brain to figure out the best possible answer or the funniest answer or the most true answer or the most provocative answer in the moment. But so far, I want to say that it's been such pleasure playing here, and that it's great when audience does have questions, regardless of what the questions are, and that it's much harder to play when the audience doesn't have questions, because then, you know, you have to deal with the lull.
If you're listening to this and you're going to be coming to the show, be ready to join in, because that's what really makes it work.
Exactly, exactly. It's all on you.
Before we finish, tell me a little bit about before Edinburgh. Is this the very beginning of the show? Were you, you know, were you doing it back home before you came here? And
yes, so basically this is not the beginning of the show. We started working on the show in May 2017. Then we had a workshop version. Then we performed at an LGBT minority festival in New York. Then we basically did an immersive version, a 4-hour sort of like overlapping immersive version of it. And then finally we were ready to put it on as an off-Broadway run. So we ran in New York for a month. That was last November 2018, and then we were finally ready for a tour. And where else would we go but Edinburgh Fringe? There's only one in the world.
What kind of responses did you get with the New York run?
Various. Fun. Actually, it's really interesting because you don't know yet because you haven't seen the show, but or if you have, people vote on different positions that these anti-role models or influences present throughout the last part, and it's been super surprising that all the audiences here every day have voted the same positions. which has never happened in New York. In New York, it was completely unpredictable of who's going to be the top role model of today, what's going to be voted out. And
that
here, day after day, we're getting the same responses, which is really interesting. Yeah.
Well, that says about Edinburgh audiences.
I wonder what that says about Edinburgh audiences. For right now, it says, be old, be free, be best, exploit your sexuality, and children, they're not worth it.
Thank you. Well, on that cheerful note, thank you very much. If you are listening to this and you're still in, and it's still the festival, and it's Edinburgh 2019, then the Female Role Model Project runs till the end of the festival at Bedlam at noon. And Tiasha, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.